Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening. My name's Stephen Frampton, and you're listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, our guest will be joining us. I'll be telling you all about her. She's a Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell, and we'll be talking about evidence of telepathy. But before we get started, I would like to welcome my co-hosts. Nonna Marie, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing just great. Enjoying the California weather when I've been hearing about Arctic storms rolling in. So I'm very happy to be here in California.
Oh, well, wonderful. Would you like to tell us about your work, Nonna Marie?
Yes, thank you. I focus mostly on predictive readings. I also do readings for animals, pets of all kinds. And I love working at Psychic Access and being able to help people understand the trail they're facing in life. And I love working for the company, just wonderful people there. And Doug is just a great person putting the whole show together for us all.
Well, it's always great to have you with us, Nonna Marie. I'm sure you'll enjoy this fascinating interview with Dr. Powell. She's a very interesting lady.
Can't wait.
Great. And Stephen, how are you doing today?
I am doing just fine, thank you. How are you?
Very well. I'm looking forward to this show.
So am I. Telepathy is one of my favorite topics, and I got to tell you, I'm wildly curious to hear what Dr. Hennessy Powell has to say on it tonight.
Oh, well, she's got new research to share with us as well, so it's going to be extremely interesting. Stephen, would you like to tell our listeners about your work before we get started with the introduction for Dr. Powell?
Sure, and thank you very much. I can be found at psychicaccess.com, as can all of us here, and I am an analytic astrologer and a tarot reader with a very strong connection to the spirit world, and I specialize in answering every burning question regarding matters of the heart, money, and job, in addition to personal spiritual evolution and growth and transformation as well, Steve. Very proud also to be affiliated with psychicaccess.com.
Well, we're proud to have you with us, Stephen. That's great. Well, I do want to mention to our listeners that Maureen's not going to be with us. She's taken a leave of absence because of family commitments, and we'll miss Maureen this evening. But we're going to get started. I'm going to tell you a little about our wonderful guest. Dr. Powell really treated science as her religion growing up. She learned about the Mobius strip before she learned about Moses, and her father had graduate degrees in marine biology, genetics, and physiology before she was even 2 years old. And by then, he was researching at Hanford Reservation to show the harmful effects of radioactivity on the environment. And really, if there's a gene that predisposes you to extensive schooling, then Dr. Powell inherited a double whammy. She chose to study human consciousness. Everything is relevant to human consciousness, even statistics. And Dr. Powell's passion is to experience and share the eureka moments that come with discovery, when all of the pieces of a puzzle fit together for the first time, to look for clues to a deeper understanding of the unsolved mysteries of human consciousness, drawing upon neuroscience, physics, psychology, spirituality, genetics, molecular biology, anthropology, and as she says, well, everything. Now, if you'd like more information about Dr. Powell and her absolutely fascinating work, please visit her website. It's DianeHennessyPowell.com. That's Diane with one N, and then HENNACY Powell with two L's .com. Well, Dr. Powell, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Stephen. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're very excited to have you back because as soon as I got wind of your new research, new discoveries, and all of your recent activities, I really wanted to get you back on the show with us. So we're grateful for you taking the time to be here. Well, Dr. Powell, I think the first thing I want to ask you is to share with us a little bit about what you've been working on this summer.
Well, I have been fascinated by children who are severely autistic and reports of them being telepathic. And so what I've been doing is locating these children. I went and interviewed and the family members and the people who work with this child this past spring, and presented my results at the Parapsychological Association's conference in May. And I want to continue to do that work. It's very exciting.
Wonderful. Well, can you tell us a little bit about this child, Dr. Powell?
Yeah, so just to give you a little bit of background, I have been trying to model a scientifically based model for understanding consciousness that really incorporates all the data, and there's so much that gets ignored by neuroscience because it just doesn't make sense. And one of the things that I realized early on was that telepathy would be something that would be one of the easiest things to demonstrate visually. If you think about it, you have two people in separate areas, and you just show one person one thing, and then you have the other person, type out or write whatever it is that they're perceiving. So it's very easy to document that. But, the problem with things like precognition is that, somebody can they can have a vision that something's going to happen in the future, and you don't know exactly when that's going to happen. So it makes it very difficult to research. So I saw telepathy as a very compelling thing to investigate, because it's also something that so many people report. And I wondered, well, it could be something that's really innately human. It's something that science fiction authors have proposed might be something that Neanderthals had, prior to language. It's something that they also talk about as, other worlds, that in the future, that we may run into, other beings that have these abilities. And so and telepathy is something that's been reported across the world, over time. And so I thought, this is a really interesting thing to investigate. And it would fit in with my model, because my model, as you mentioned, I've studied many sciences, and my model is, I'm using my background in physics. I have a brother who's a physicist, and I recently joined a think tank where there's a cosmologist and three physicists, and I'm the only one who's not, technically a physicist who's part of it. But what we're trying to do is create a model. So this child is not only someone who could potentially prove telepathy, but also help us to create a better model for understanding, because let me explain what she can do. She first was working with these therapists in her home. She was 9 years old when I first heard about her. And the therapists were working with her to try to teach her language, and just to tell the audience who don't know much about autism, a severely autistic child really struggles with language. This girl, at most, has about a 16-month-old capacity to speak. So you can, if you watch the video, I have an Indiegogo campaign that I've just launched, and there's some video on there that where people can actually see her in action. And you'll hear her in the second video when you look at that. There, you don't have me speaking over the video, and you can actually hear her, just this little voice that's actually saying the letters and the numbers as she's selecting them. And so, but that's about all she can do, because otherwise she's very delayed in speech. And so these therapists were working with her to try to teach her basic language skills, and she also doesn't know how to do, basic math. And while they were working with her, they started to discover that she knew the answers to things, that they thought, wow, that's amazing, she can do this math problem. And so they kept making the math problems harder and harder. And then what they discovered was, and they were thinking that she was a mathematical savant, because there's certainly lots of cases reported of that sort of thing, where you have a child who can barely do anything, but they have this just amazing gift. So that's how she was being thought of. And then what happened was is that the therapist who was working with her one day and had to use a calculator because the equations, the math was so extensive using large digits, when the calculator switched displays from normal numbered notation, and she was saying, okay, you know, what's the answer? The girl actually typed out what was on the display, which had changed to logarithmic. So in other words, that's, you know, something, you're doing it to the base, you know, so something, you know, what is this number to the base, you know, base 2 or base 10 or whatever. So whatever notation was on the calculator, that's how she typed it out. And that made this therapist go, how did you do that? It made her, it just was so obvious that, you know, that because the calculator wasn't within the girl's sight. And the girl typed back. She has this, she can communicate by typing onto this little tablet device. And she typed back, I see the numbers, the numerators and denominators in your head. And so after that point, the couple of therapists who work with her have been continuing to, you know, explore, you know, whether or not, you know, she's telepathic. And what's fascinating is that the second therapist who's been working with her independently started to suspect it because she would make mistakes and the girl would copy her exact mistakes. And then she also asked the child she said to her, how do you say I love you in German? Because she was thinking of things that she would know that this child wouldn't know. And then the girl types it out exactly in German, and it's something she'd never been exposed to. So there was all of this evidence which made me think, okay, I had heard this, and I'd heard it from reputable people. This child's family, or they're a very solid family. They live in America, and the father is a doctor, and he wants to understand what's going on with his daughter. They don't want to be famous. They don't want money. They just saw that this was something important. And they looked me up and came to me, and I went out in the spring and was there for 3 days to film experiments.
How interesting. Absolutely fascinating. I want to just clarify with you, Dr. Powell, she is sensing telepathically what another person or what the therapist is focusing upon or thinking upon. It's not right that she's sensing it from a device. She's sensing it from that person's consciousness. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. So to give you some examples of what she's been able to demonstrate, now, and once again, there's what she's demonstrated for me, and then she's what she demonstrated for other people. And so to tell you what she has demonstrated for other people is this process of somebody just thinking something, and they say that she types out the words exactly. When she looks at a picture, and this is something I actually I did experiments to try to figure out what is going on, and so when I went there to film, I would give the therapist a picture for her to look at on her side of this divider between the two of them, and I told her that I wanted her to not only show the picture to the camera so that would be documented, but I wanted her to also write out the thoughts that she had when looking at that picture. Because you could think a lot of different things looking at a picture, and I wanted to know, is Haley's response, that's the child's, that's the name that she goes by, is her response going to be one in which she's getting a visual image, and therefore she's going to describe, you know, something about that image, or is it going to be the exact wording of the therapist? And it was always the exact wording of the therapist during my experiments. And she's also been tested on, for example, I took these a random number generator, and I created these numbers that were several digits long, and then used those numbers to create equations. Because one of the things about working with these children is that they get bored, and if what you're doing is asking them to do too simple of a task, they get frustrated. They feel insulted, and so, knowing that, I made the task harder, and I created these equations that have, some of them are up to 18 digits in length if you include the number that's being, you know, the number that's being multiplied and the numbers being divided and the answer. And the girl was asked to telepathically provide the numbers, all of the numbers in the equation and the answer. And she did 10 equations with 162 digits in about 10 minutes, making only 7 errors, both of which she corrected on the second try. The odds against that are just staggering.
Impossible. Absolutely brilliant. Is this typical of children or of adults even with autism? Have you heard of this this phenomenon, this incredible telepathic ability in other people that have autism?
Yes. So what happened is that I, how this all started really is an interesting story. I've been studying autism for many years, and I became really interested in the autistic savants and people who, like, for example, people who, like Daniel Kahneman, who have this ability to, these prodigious memories, you know, where he knows pi, repeating constant for, that's used mathematically that just keeps on repeating. He knows that to over 22,000 decimal points. And these mathematical savants who can't multiply at all. They can't do simple addition, but they can solve complex mathematical problems. Or these children who can't do math, but they can provide 6 or 7 digit primes just out of thin air. Oliver Sacks wrote about these two twins who would just toss them back and forth, these 6-digit primes back and forth with one another as a game. And to figure out a prime, that's a very complicated kind of algorithm. And when you ask these children, you know, how do you do this? They don't know. They're not calculating in their head. The answer just pops up to them. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And the more I looked at their skills, the more I realized that I can't create a model for understanding them that makes sense. By just looking at it being purely that they've got phenomenal memories, which we know they do oftentimes, that they've got amazing pattern recognition skills, things like not being able to do math and pull prime numbers out of thin air just seemed a little bit different. And so I thought, that's a lot like what people who are psychic say, that the answers come to them. It's not one of those things where they're trying to derive it with their analytical brain. Instead, it just comes to them. Some people get it auditorily, some people get it visually. And I suspect with these children who are autistic who have these abilities that some of them it may be visual, some of them may be auditory. We don't really know. That's the kind of thing that I want to continue to explore is how is she receiving the message. But anyway, so I became interested in these savants, and then I started thinking, this is a lot like Psy. And when I went to go and evaluate some of these, I started hearing reports from the parents that they were telepathic. That was the thing that was reported to me the most frequently. And I thought, oh, isn't that interesting? And I'd have parents say to me things like, I can't hide anything from her. You know, she knows how many, if I go into the kitchen and I'm trying to keep her, from eating too many, chips or whatever, then, I won't let her know. And she'll, about the ones that are in the kitchen, and she'll say, what about those other chips? And it's because she was reading reading the mind, and knowing from, the parents. So they find it really hard to hide things from them. And that, isn't that interesting? Let's set up some experiments to test this out. So I went to India in January to evaluate these children. And I came back, and shortly after I came back, I received an email from Martin White, who is a British film documentarian, who he produced films on autistic savants. And he had just returned from India, where he found out about this boy who was reportedly telepathic, and he went and he witnessed this child, and he wrote me this email, and he said, this child, you know, really impressed me, and wanted to know, you know, what was my experience with the children that I had seen. So after getting that as like an additional confirmation, it just reinforced, you know, my thoughts that I think I'm on the right track.
Wow. It's very exciting, isn't it? And really exciting that you're taking a very scientific approach to this, to actually creating a scientific model and working with physicists. What do the physicists make of this, Dr. Powell?
Well, if you think about what physicists right now are trying to do, theoretical physicists, that is, they're really trying to take quantum physics, which is at the micro scale, you know, it's a subatomic scale. They're trying to take that and they're trying to unify it with the theories of relativity, Einstein's work, that's on the macro scale. So there's this idea that there's a certain beauty to the idea that what's happening on the micro world and on the macro world are really sort of all just kind of an outgrowth of the same thing. And what people are finding is that if you look at the macro world, it's very, to understand the data, it really makes sense to think of it in terms of that we do live in a holographic universe. And this is something that a lot of, you know, David Bohm is a, you know, famous physicist who has presented this idea. So there are a number of people out there that have presented this idea. And, you know, and what does living in a holographic universe mean? Living in a holographic universe means that all information is located everywhere. That, and if you think about it, you know, that really is a, you know, it's a fascinating concept. And so the use of the term holograph comes from the ability to create these three-dimensional images. If you take light, laser light, that's very coherent, and you split the beam, you know, while capturing this three-dimensional object, you can then take that image, and when the beams come back together, you can create this image that you can actually walk around. You know, it's totally three-dimensional. And if you were to take it and to break it or divide it into pieces, each one of those sections would contain the whole image. So somehow all of the information about that entire image keeps getting contained. And if you keep breaking it, it's all contained in each one of those little pieces. And so if you think of that as sort of an analogy for how information is organized in the universe, and you think of that as being something that we see not just in the form of you know, the macro and the micro, but you think of it as something that we as human beings could potentially experience, what would that be like? If you know, if all of the information about all of space-time is present everywhere, then if we could possibly tap into it, wouldn't that be what we call psychic?
It would. Absolutely, it would. And what reaction did you get when you presented this information at the conference you attended in the summer, Dr. Powell? Because I know that scientists are often very skeptical. What did they have to say?
Well, the scientific conference that I presented at was the Parapsychological Association's conference, and it was they've been having annual conferences for over 50 years now, and all of these really renowned parapsychologists were there. I felt it was wonderful to be able to present in the Bay Area because people like Stephen Schwartz and Charlie Targ and Russell Targ and Gary Schwartz came in from Arizona, and Dean Radin was there, and Marilyn Schlitz was there. It was just this incredible gathering of all of these people who are parapsychologists, who probably about 100 of us, who are really trying to push this paradigm forward. And when I presented my data, John Rhine, you know, from the Rhine Center, he said to me, I'm sorry, not John Rhine, I'm John Palmer. He said to me, he said, he was surprised. He said, how can you stand there so calmly? He said, your data, he said, this is just, he said, this data is so staggering. He was surprised that I could be so calm in presenting it. So people were very impressed with this girl's amazing accuracy on these equations, and that's probably the best segment there, you know, in terms of accuracy. And on those, she was over 90% accurate on each equation. And we don't have that kind of data. We don't in telepathy experiments. But here's the problem, but it's a solvable problem. But the problem is that when I went to go film Haley in the spring, it was really a reconnaissance mission. I had heard about her. I wanted to see if I could, is this real? Is she going to be able to demonstrate it? I had instructed the therapist and the family that she needed to do any kind of sessions with the therapist doing telepathy with a barrier between her and the therapist. And for an autistic child, introducing something like that, any kind of change, is extremely challenging. They resist it. And so I was preparing them over the winter for me to come in the spring by having this barrier between them. And what happened was is that, and this happens with autistic children, is that you'll see some regression back to an earlier sort of stage of development if they are a little stressed. And so what happened was that she went back from, she was typing independently into a tablet. She went from doing that to working again with stencil boards with the therapist, who would hold the stencil board sort of on the other side, on the other side of the barrier in front of Haley, while herself staying behind her side and keeping the test stimulus on her side so that Haley couldn't see it, and asking Haley, you know, please read my mind, what am I looking at, that sort of thing. And so what happened is that the therapist would be doing that, and Haley would be on her side, and she would use her pencil to select the letters or numbers from the stencils. And as I said, the poking at a letter, and as their selection is how she learned to type and language in the first place. So she went back to doing that. I have every reason to believe she could go back to typing independently. But one of the problems is because you have someone holding a stencil. Skeptics, that they've already, said that, skeptics are very wary of, is the therapist giving cues to the child by how they're holding the stencil? And the reality is that if you listen to the stories of the family about what they've observed with this child, and you actually look at, I have hours of footage. I have 6 hours of footage. And you look at the footage of this child, you see that it's not that the therapist is giving her cues. But it's one of those things where it's just so mind-blowing that, it's just hard for people to digest at first. So I need to go back and be able to film her again with, a complete partition between her and the therapist, and really demonstrate that she can do this and that she can type independently. And then that'll do it. That'll solve whatever kinds of concerns people might have.
And what is it that's different about an autistic person that enables them to sense so clearly? Or do we even know yet what it is that enables them to do this?
Well, one of the reasons I thought that autistic children would be able to do this is it's basically more than just the fact that The autistic savants have skills that are very similar to, to psi. It goes beyond that because, first of all, I'm a neuropsychiatrist, and I look at the brain. And even though I think that the brain really shapes our experience of consciousness, which is different from saying that, you know, that it is the, you know, it's what creates consciousness, or, you know, any of the other assumptions that we make. But we do know that it shapes our experience of consciousness, and that people have different experiences. And so if somebody never experiences anything psychic, then it's hard for them to imagine. People who have those experiences frequently, they just take it as part of life. And so I thought, well, what's different about the brains of people that have these experiences regularly and the ones who don't? And so I took my background to look at the populations of people in which these experiences are reported the most. And I found that they have certain things in common about the way that their brain works. And one thing is something that a lot of people already know, and that is that the right hemisphere of the brain is much more intuitive, whereas the left side of the brain is so much more analytical. And so the left hemisphere of the brain actually inhibits the right hemisphere. And so it's really, for most of us, it's what's the dominant the dominant sort of processor most of the time. And we have to kind of get out of that. We have to get out of our, you know, get out of that analytical mind to allow this information to bubble up, because we tend to want to, you know, second guess things or analyze things. So that's one characteristic. And people with autism have left hemisphere damage. It's one of the reasons why they have such difficulty with language. And it's one of the reasons why they, so many of them are, for example, like Haley, they're nonverbal. So that was one of my thoughts. And then also thinking about the fact that they're nonverbal gives them high motivation. If they're in a situation where they're totally dependent upon another person who does really care for them, then if there is some other way in which you can try to transmit thoughts or pick up other people's thoughts, that would be a circumstance in which it would bring it out, especially with someone's primary caregiver. And then another thing is that people with autism, because of the fact that their outermost part of their brain, it's wired differently than ours, it makes them actually less conceptual in their thinking. In other words, we tend to miss a lot of information by labeling something. And so the beauty of a label is that it's got a lot of information compacted into one word, like, you know, oak tree. You know, but there's all this specific information about that specific tree, you know, in my front yard, that would be lost if all I said was oak tree. And so when you think conceptually, the using these shortcuts like the words, you're losing a lot of information. Whereas people who are autistic, they don't think conceptually; they see what's there. So they don't have a lot of the perceptual distortions that we have, because we have certain expectations about what we will and will not see. And that's one of the, you know, that's where a lot of our errors occur. You know, change blindness is a well-known phenomenon that's been documented by showing people. There's this one famous movie where there are these people playing basketball, and you're asked as an audience to watch this movie of these people playing basketball and to keep your eyes on the ball. And this person wearing a gorilla suit walks right into the center of the basketball court, and people are still playing basketball. And then after you see the movie, people say, okay, did you notice anything unusual about that movie? And a high percentage of people will not even to see the person in the gorilla suit. But then when you show them the movie again after telling them that, they're like, oh, yeah, of course it's there. And so that's because we see what we expect to see and we don't see what we don't expect to see unless we're really open-minded. So with autism, they don't have these kind of expectations. So they have much less of a, you know, sort of inhibition on their thought processes.
It's incredible. It really is. Well, Dr. Powell, we're going to take a short break and then we will resume the interview.
Thank you.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We are living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
And so I read your first book, Dr. Powell, The ESP Enigma. It's one of my favorites because it's just packed with evidence of extrasensory perception. I've got a hard copy all highlighted with stickers and I go back through it regularly. Are you planning to write a book about these new discoveries?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's I've already been working on an outline for the next book. But what I want to do before I finish that book is I want to go back and do some more research. I know of not only this child, but I know of at least 3 other children who are in India. So I'm in other places, and so I'm thinking of going back to film them under experimental conditions as well, because it makes it a much more powerful case to show that it's not just this one child. And I'm thrilled that I have a child who demonstrates it with 2 different people, which gives me lots of options. So another experiment that I want to go back and do is to have Haley have one therapist with her and then another, and the other therapist in another room, and so see if she can read the therapist in the other room's mind. And then it'd be interesting to see if there's a distance effect. And there's all kinds of interesting, and if she can go back and forth and read both therapists' minds, and see what kind of variables create errors and which variables actually give stronger answers. And so I want to go back, do those experiments and do it on at least 3 or 4 children and write all of that up as a pretty comprehensive study. And but I need people's help to do that because I'm talking about a very ambitious plan here.
I'm sure you'll do it. Knowing you, I'm sure you'll do it. I want to ask, if anyone can do it, you can. I know you will. But I want to ask you as well, this particular piece of research with Haley is very focused on telepathy. And we know from other examples that you mentioned and other information in the public domain about autism that there can be other exceptional abilities like an incredible memory and just astounding mathematical ability, etc. Have you heard of any evidence, or do you think it may be possible that autistic children or autistic adults may also have precognitive ability?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of the things. That's another thing. I think that after telepathy, precognition is probably the most commonly reported by these children. There's one famous case where this girl who was an autistic savant, she had this dream that her father died of a heart attack at the dining room table, and the next day he died of a heart attack at the dining room table in the exact way that she had the dream. And there are lots of precognitions that this one child in India who I evaluated named Vishal, he has precognitions on a regular basis. And so that's something that I want to document, though. It's to hear about it afterwards is not as compelling as being able to document, okay, these are the precognitions, and then seeing, what comes true. But also I'd like to actually experimentally do the kinds of things, like, for example, there have been experiments on precognition in which you test to see if someone, you can test for the future by saying, I'm going to show you something in the future. And you yourself don't even know what it looks like. And you can ask the child, what is it going to look like? And so there are different ways in which you can test it, which I want to do. But absolutely, these children, I think that there is a lot here. I mean, these children report all kinds of things, and what's fascinating is they report things that they're not really being exposed to. I mean, they're not being raised with families that are telling them about things like past lives, but some of these children report past lives. You know, what is that? One of the theories for autistic savants is that, well, maybe their last life they were a famous musician, and that's why now that 4 years old without a single piano lesson they can play like this. That's one hypothesis, but it's still, then you have to understand, you know, what's the mechanism behind past life? and this theory that I'm working on with these physicists, all of that, in which all of the information is available everywhere, it explains everything, including those kinds of things. You know, it doesn't have to be woo-woo. See, because what it is we're talking about information. One of the things to think about, and this is another, I'm taking it on a slightly different tack here to give people another way of thinking of this. A fractal is similar to a hologram in that, in a fractal, what you have is that as you keep adding on to the shape, what gets added on has the same, continues to have the same shape as what the whole has. So it has this beautiful sort of what we call self-referential quality to it. So we have lots of fractals in nature. An example is like the shape of a nautilus or the shape of a pine cone. And what you have there is that the development is happening, the growth is happening on the periphery, but somehow there's this awareness always, just like there is in human development or any development of any organism, when you're talking about from the very beginning, talk about cells that are dividing in the very beginning, it's like, when you look at that embryological development, that happens so rapid, fast, and it just so much is going on so rapidly. It's like, how does it even know where it's going, right? And so if there's information about everything everywhere, then that explains that. And so I think that this is a fundamental characteristic of how the universe in nature is organized, and that our human consciousness, if it could tap into it, then it means that it would be able to access information. So that means clairvoyance, clairaudience, remote viewing, precognition. All of those things are traveling in space, space-time, where you've got that information somehow.
It's very exciting. You must be extremely excited.
I am. I feel very blessed. I feel very blessed to be at this place, because to me as a scientist, this is just one of the most fascinating things to be studying. And then to have this possibility of this kind of setup where I'm actually... The kind of experiments I'm doing are ones in which I'm probing by setting up experiments and seeing how is this information telepathically being transmitted in a way where it's a simple kind of system. You see what I'm saying? As I say, if I modify variables like distance, how many people know the answer, give conflicting, you know, if I give her conflicting information, like what if, you know, the therapist is trying to hold two pictures in her mind at the same time? You know, what does that look like? These things are actually, they may or may not interest your audience, but these are all interesting questions for people who are interested in physics, because yes, they will help to inform our model for understanding the universe. There's this direct relationship between consciousness and the universe, and that seems to have been, you know, that with the scientific revolution, there, you know, and the scientific method and all of that, you know, they sort of sterilized science, but actually, by putting back into science the sort of using, you know, intuition, you know, and that's the kind of scientist I am. I use my intuition, I get hunches, and then, but I want to back it up with the data.
That's a great way to function.
I need to be able to do that.
We get asked a lot about psychic development, development of intuition, and I always say having intuition and developing intuition is wonderful, but we should validate somehow as well. So I love that you're taking that approach. And I wanted to say to you, Dr. Powell, we're blessed and to have a scientist and psychiatrist of your caliber doing this extremely important research. And it's extremely interesting that as well as proving that telepathy exists, you're exploring the very difficult task of, well, how does this work? So that's extremely exciting as well. I want to ask you, though, do you think that the ability of the child to actually sense the information telepathically is also related to the ability of the person transmitting the information or not?
Well, this is what's interesting, is that this girl has only been tested with these two therapists. So it may be that she could be telepathic with a lot of people. We don't know. You know, one of the mother's reasons for wanting me to come and evaluate the child and really get a better understanding of this is that she wants to know, can this child read my thoughts? You know, it's really, when you have a child that is autistic, I mean, you don't, you know, any parent, you know, it may not always have the most pleasant thoughts, you know, and so, you know, for her, she's just, you know, that was a, you know, when she first thought, oh my gosh, my child might be reading my thoughts, you know, is this possible? And we haven't tested that, but it's possible she may be able to, maybe that she was reading my thoughts. I don't know. I want to go back and see. But one of the things that's interesting is that some of the errors that that Haley made during the experiment, when I talked with the therapist after the experiment, the therapist, one of them had finals the next day, and she said to me, I know that, you know, Haley was getting frustrated because of me, sometimes I wasn't focusing. Isn't that interesting?
It really is. It's just incredibly exciting. Well, Diana, can I ask you about a certain TV appearance or not?
Oh, sure. Yeah, what would you like to know?
Well, I know that you told me that you were interviewed as part of the production for the next Ancient Aliens series. I wanted to ask you about that partly because I'm really excited that you're going to be on the show, but also it made me think about the scope of the show and whether the scope is changing from the theme of aliens to subjects such as telepathy.
Well, the show, you know, it's interesting because I'm actually going to be on two episodes. And they were both shot back to back, actually, after I spoke at the Parapsychological Association's meeting. And one of the episodes is on genius. And so I talked about Einstein and the brain and genius and autistic savants and you know, some other things, but I think that show, what they said to me, that another thing that they're very interested in is not just this whole issue of, you know, whether or not aliens you know, came to the earth, or whether or not they're still, you know, among us or whatever, but they're also interested in this concept of universal mind, you know, which to me, by universal mind, they really mean this ability to tap into this, you know, sort of consciousness, you know, where all of the information is. And so it fits more into that category, because they realize people are interested in that too.
Excellent, excellent. Now, how long do you think your research is going to take, and when do you think we might expect to see the next book?
Well, I'm going to, I'm allowing myself about 18 months, because you never know when you're dealing with, you know, long distance travel and autistic children, where you're trying to make modifications to their routine. And so I'm allowing myself about a year. I think that I should be able to accomplish all of this research in a year, and then there's the time to put together, you know, the documentation and analyze the data and everything. So I'm thinking that about I'm aiming for July 2016 to, we're producing a full-length documentary film, because I'm having to go film these children anyway, and then to have that combined with footage, with experts talking about what you're seeing, and I think it just makes an extremely fascinating documentary. I have a filmographer who's had films that are have been seen in over 200 countries around the world, and he wants to work with me. So I'm thinking of timing my next book actually with the, you know, to come just shortly before the film, because I want to really have the new research in there as well.
Brilliant. Really, really exciting. And how can we stay up to speed with your research, Dr. Powell? I know you have a great website and you issue blogs. How can we stay in tune with your discoveries?
Well, if people, I've started a, because I want to have as much say over the documentation of this phenomenon as possible, and because it is, it's not just a film documentary, but it's also science. And so what I'm doing right now is I started an Indiegogo campaign to raise money so that I can dedicate the time to go travel to India, the United Arab Emirates, you know, and other places, spend time with these children, get the film footage I need, and really compile this. I can't, the way I've been doing it now is I go for 2 weeks and then come back, and it just, it's not the way to go. I really need to be able to just go and do it. So that's why I started the campaign. And the more money I can raise, then the more control I have over what the documentary looks like, and then I can, you know, create the documentary and present it to people. And so that's what I'm, that's my intention. And there's, people can sign up for the Indiegogo campaign. It's called the Telepathy Project. And if it, for a $20 Join Our Team membership, people will get, I'm going to be sending people updates specifically about this research, including video clips and that sort of thing, to those people who help support the campaign. And then of course, if people want to read about other things that I do, I have a free newsletter and free blog that people can sign up for at my website.
Wonderful. And how do we find out about contributing then towards this new piece of research? Is there a link on your website?
Yes, there is, yes.
Okay, so we can go to dianehennessypowell.com and we can find the information there and make a contribution to support the research and the project.
Yes, that would be lovely.
Fantastic. Well, it's really exciting. Really, really exciting. Well, what do you, I know you're up to your eyeballs in this project. Where do you think it will lead? Do you have your eye on any particular phenomenon or project beyond this one? I'm sure you're not short of ideas.
Oh, you mean after proving telepathy, yes, and precognition and coming up with the unification of the physics? After I finish all that, those are all projects I'm really very interested in. I also, at the Parapsychological Conference, Stefan Schwartz and I started talking about collaborating on a study about remote healing. I have a colleague who's at the University of Minnesota, and he has an endowed chair, and he was one of the people who was instrumental in creating much of the neuroimaging that we have today. He was the ground floor of diffuser tensor imaging, which is where we can see the anatomy. And so once I've had a chance to study these children, then what I want to do is I actually want to look at their neuroanatomy. I have certain hypotheses about how I think that their brains are wired. So I really want to, it's modeling more clearly how it is that our brain sort of navigates the hologram, if you will. So that's very much part of the project as well.
Well, we wish you lots of luck, Dr. Powell, and we're very thankful that you joined us today, and we'll certainly be following your work, looking out for you on Ancient Aliens, and waiting in anticipation for your documentary and the book. So thank you very much for joining us, and thank you again for doing this work, because it's
so... Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for having the show and having me on it.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. We wish you all the best for the future, and we'll be staying in tune with what you're up to.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Dr. Powell. Really great interview. An incredible piece of work, incredible person. And I want to just take a moment to remind you to visit Dr. Powell's website. It's DianeHennessyPowell.com. Lots of really fascinating information there, and you can stay up to speed with this wonderful project about autism and telepathy. And be sure to stay tuned for the second half of our show to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We'll announce the call-in number later, so be sure to have your pen and paper ready. If you didn't catch our show last week, you'll find the recorded archive link, as well as archives to all of our previous shows, at psychicaccesstalkradio.com. Just click on the archives tab and everything is there for you. It's also available in iTunes. And please feel free to circulate those archive links and our future show details to your friends and family. It's our objective to connect with as many people as possible. So please go ahead and share those links. And be sure as well to visit our website, psychicbloggers.com, where you can learn about everything from the paranormal to reincarnation, tarot, mediumship, astrology, psychic development. There's a huge amount of information on there, and it's all presented by the professionals that are part of the Psychic Access team, and that information is all free for you. And if you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com. You'll find that all of our team members are verified, accuracy tested, and each of them is offering their unique gifts. You can read their profiles and find out about each of them and choose the person that you feel can most help you with your question or your inquiry. And it's an honor to work with Psychic Access, the team, and with Doug, because we have very high expectations of ourselves and very high expectations of all of the readers at Psychic Access. All of the hosts here at Psychic Access Talk Radio are available at Psychic Access. So if you would like a personal reading from one of us, be sure to visit us at psychicaccess.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if you have a website, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading for traffic that is referred to psychicaccess.com. So if you'd like more information about that incredible offer, please visit psychicaccess.com/webmasters. And again, if you like our show, please invite your friends to join us in our chat room and listen into the psychic viewpoint. Cover some fantastic subjects. Every week is different, so please spread the word, and the more people that join us, the better. Now, we're going to move to that part of the show in which we have our banter between the co-hosts. We discuss the interview. So I want to ask Nonna Marie, first of all, how you feel about the interview and this incredible research Dr. Powell has been doing.
Well, I think it's amazing work and long, long overdue. I remember I read a book years ago, something called like The Pony Boy, and it was about a couple who took their severely autistic child to Mongolia to meet a shaman as a last resort to see if they could get their child healed. And when it's a really incredible book. I think they made a movie out of it. And what they found when they met the shaman in Mongolia is in the middle of nowhere, by the way, just like in a yurt in the middle of a giant plain. And his comment to the parents was, "This was me when I was a child." In other words, he had all the signs of autism, and in fact, it was a spiritual gift, and it was something that led him into the incredible healing work that he did as an adult, and that's very common in other cultures. So it's about time that science, United States or Western world science, got on the boat of researching that perhaps autism is really a gift of sorts, not a disorder as we like to always make it out to be. So I love this. I love that you got her as a guest, because I love the combination of spirituality and science, and she has that same outlook, and it's phenomenal that she's getting funding and being able to do this kind of work and publish this material. And I think it will be a huge motivation and reassurance and validation to people who have autistic children to look into the autism from a different perspective now, that maybe it's a gift, that maybe there's something else there besides managing, handling, shame, special ed, and all that kind of way that we have of sort of classifying those kind of children right now in this country. So I was thrilled to hear her information. Thank you.
Well, it just shows that everybody has their gifts, and I think that in society we make too many judgments about people, and we should be recognizing that each person has talent and gifts to share, and autistic kids and adults are extremely interesting. Some of their abilities are just incredible. So thank you for your comments, Nonna Marie. Stephen, what are your thoughts?
Well, as far as the subject of autism is concerned, I think it's long been a fascinating one to me, because I'm not a physician, but it seems as if autism is hard to classify it, whether it's an actual disease, or more properly a syndrome of some sort. You know, it's mysterious. It's hard to pin down organically. And autism, the syndrome of it, to my thinking, very pungently and vividly describes that old saw about a genius being close to madness. You know, there's a touch of the genius in autism. Certainly it can manifest in pathological ways where there is some impediment, some lack of function. But it's just shocking how in so many cases there is a corresponding excess of function in some other area. Now, as to the general topic of telepathy, you know, it seems to me that anytime we moderners cultivate a new technology, our attitude is to plunge headfirst into it. But I see a couple of problems with telepathy. First of all, you know, our government has already proven that it has some issues with just basic privacy, reading your email. What would happen if it can read your mind? And then, perhaps most important, I really don't have faith that human beings can withstand the naked, unalloyed luminosity of another person's consciousness, where we lack that layer of social grease that soothes the friction of truth and reality when it, you know, we don't want you to know what I really think about you in that Sunday dress. You know, you don't really want to know what I think about your singing voice. You know what I'm saying? And so if you can read my mind, that social grease is gone. Think about when you burn away a layer of your skin, the physicians, they smear grease on it to prevent the oxygen of the air from chafing at it. And, you know, I think that our lack of psychic sensation is a correlate to that grease. It protects us from the naked, unalloyed truth of matter. So we have to be prepared for that. There could literally be a tidal wave of nihilistic homicide because of this, you see. And also, again, there's the privacy concerns. I'm not quite sure I want people reading my mind. And I definitely don't want to read the minds of other people. I mean, most people are boring. Their thoughts are boring.
Well, I was thinking that it would be fascinating to look at the natal charts, the astrology charts of these incredible kids that have these wonderful abilities.
Yes, it would. It would. There would definitely, and you know, that's an area that needs some research, Steve. I would say there's a whole swath of interests related to pathology that still need to be investigated. In terms of how they show up in a natal chart or what have you, and you know, that's an area of research that you and I are definitely very invested and interested in, and it's nice to see other sciences touching upon the question as well.
It really is. Well, thank you for your comments, Stephen. Now, Nonna sure. Marie, if I'm not mistaken, you studied psychology.
Yes.
How much content was included about the paranormal or telepathy, psychic ability? Was there a fair amount or very little or none?
No, it is the dark ages in mainstream psychology, and to even bring up these areas, you actually risk losing your job, honestly. And my PhD was actually in health psychology and behavioral medicine, which had some body, mind, spirit type of coursework in it that was decades behind the time, decades. So when I hear of a researcher like your guest, Dr. Powell, that is so exciting because it's still considered very cutting edge. And things like autism are addressed from the concept of containment and management. There is not any discussion about it being a gift. And even in the study of multicultural psychology, which does look at shamanism and medicine men and medicine women and having psychic gifts, it's still considered an anomaly. Like, oh yes, these primitive cave people have this stuff going on, rather than being given due respect and saying perhaps it exists in all cultures, it's just we deny it in this culture. So it is a sad case, I believe, and it's one of the main reasons I shied away from getting licensed in mainstream psychology, because you can get in a lot of trouble for putting your toes into this arena. Still, it's crazy. Like the dark ages.
It is. It's shocking. I do remember, though, we had Dr. Mitchell Gibson on the show at some point. I think it was actually last year, Anonymous. I can't believe it's almost the end of this year. So it was certainly last year. And he's a psychiatrist and also an astrologer. And he told us some absolutely fascinating stories about his experiences working with clients, one of whom made the noises of a computer and said that he was basically receiving information about the future, and they documented the things that he said about the future, and they did all occur. There was another client who was somehow possessed and actually spoke in a completely different voice, certainly not the voice of a young girl, and she knew things about Dr. Mitchell that she could never have known. So that there are some professionals in the psychiatric and
there are for sure, but they are a pitiful minority still.
Yes.
I mean, even who was it, Michael Newman, who is a hypnotherapist and was a professor for years, he was probably one of the first people to write a book about that his clients had gone into what he called the life between lives regressions, and he had thousands of cases. But when he published his book, the university went insane and denounced him. So it is out there, but it is still a risky business to talk about this and to get published in it. So, but it is true. There are fabulous, fabulous cases out there. I just wish it was mainstream psychology. I wish that people were learning about some of this in high school so that the gifted children could learn that perhaps they have a gift, that there isn't something wrong with them, but something incredibly right with them. And unfortunately, you have to seek out these folks who are doing this brilliant research. You have to hunt them down and find them. You have to, you know, hear them on shows like this. We should have them in grade school, junior high school, freshman college psychology, so that people who grew up gifted find a way to work with what they have instead of hiding it in the closet like it's a disease or a mental disorder.
Hopefully we'll see that changing. And it's as you say, people like Dr. Powell that are real pioneers that are getting out there and doing this work, ignoring the potential stigma associated with it. But I think it's so important that people like Dr. Powell are doing this in a very scientific way, absolutely proving that this is occurring. Because when there's that kind of evidence or documentation, you can't argue with it. Well, apparently you can't. But Stephen and I often talk, Nonna Marie, about astrology and say, well, there's no way that somebody that inquires into astrology could refute it, because it's so accurate. It's right. It's so in-depth. You can't deny it. But yet, many people do. But unfortunately, they're people that haven't actually studied astrology. So they're speaking out of ignorance, sadly. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go ahead and give out the telephone number for our readings, and we'll continue our discussion. But if you would like to call in for a reading, the telephone number is 724-444-4851. That's 724-444-4851. And please be aware that the calls are placed on hold, and they're answered in the order that they're received in. So you will be able to listen to the show as it continues. And when you do get through to us, please be clear and direct with your question. We can only take one question per person so that we're able to handle other calls. So make sure that when you get through, you have your one question ready for us. Now, I want to go back to you for a moment, Stephen, and ask you about any experiences you've had with premonition or telepathy.
Well, certainly as an astrologer, precognition is our bread and butter. And, you know, it's not so much the astrology itself that allows the forevision, but it's where it leads you. It's an aid to the psyche and to the psychic muscle, as it were. And so I have those sorts of experiences on a daily basis. You might say it's part of the reason why I'm so thoroughly devoted to astrology. It's certainly thrilling to be accorded such a clear window into the workings of the future world. We all have our different ways of doing it. The gentleman you mentioned who made his alien Mork and Mindy sounds, or his computer sounds, and, you know, said he was receiving a download from the cosmos, you know, that was his method, but the result is what counts. You know, he was able to experience precognition. And the thing is, it's an ability that can be shared with others, and it will be eventually one day. In the schools, we'll see it taught to the children, as Nona described. But I think the answer, the key, is that we'll find it being expressed among the young in schools as a sort of a marriage between the social sciences and the more hardcore engineering sciences. It's going to be a blend of those two, because what we're dealing with here is, in essence, a blend of those two. If you tackle something like telepathy with a purely materialistic or scientific mentality and attitude, you're going to get nowhere. Likewise, if you tackle something like telepathy with a purely spiritual or spiritual or philosophical attitude, you're also not going to get anywhere. So we're going to see, the classes of the future that are going to teach astrology and precognition and telepathy to the young, they're going to be classes that are going to be sort of similar to both, your sociology class, but also to your calculus class as well. It's going to be very interesting. But of course, all of us will probably be long gone by the time that happens. We still have a ways to go, as you guys have pointed out. It's an unregulated field. What worries me is that once metaphysics does become more accepted and widespread, I guarantee you what will happen, it will suffer from the same orthodoxy that modern psychiatry and modern religion suffers from today as well. It's going to have a ton of dogmatic thinkers. One of the benefits of having all of these agencies and boards and having all of these legitimizing agencies involved with telepathy and investigations into the paranormal is that things like a jargon, a language can emerge out of that, so that we all have common ways to speak about these phenomena. But a future problem, and mark my words, is that there's going to be a lot of bureaucratizing of this, and it's going to suffer from orthodoxy and dogmatic thinking. But that's way down the road, Steve. First, we've got to get there.
We've got there. Got to get there. It's going to be a significant journey.
Yes, it is, and we're undergoing it right now. I mean, I think that we live in an opportune time to advance the importance of esoterica, such as astrology and telekinesis, etc. We couldn't live at a better time. We're enjoying a resurgence of these things, and so I expect the ensuing decades to just give us more and more opportunities to blend and wed astrology and other esoteric practices into the public awareness, into public office even. And we might even see state officials, government officials, municipal officials, again, consulting people of our ilk, astrologers and tarot readers and mediums, etc., to get the input of the larger cosmology in which they operate.
Well, they do that. Some of them do that. But again, there's this stigma associated with it, so it's risky for them to openly state that they do consult a metaphysician, an astrologer, a medium, a psychic.
True.
So times will change, I'm sure. Hopefully it won't take a ridiculous amount of time. I'm confident that we'll see a lot of progress in our lifetimes, and I'm excited that we get to be part of that we get to drive ahead, that we get to dedicate our work, our careers to metaphysics.
Yes, well, In India, it is as we say. It's astrology, metaphysical things are much more well integrated into the community. So it's they're well ahead of us, and also they're more numerous. So it's no exaggeration to say that the majority of the world, or a good percentage of it, integrates astrology, etc., into their everyday life. Steve,
absolutely, absolutely. There are people that do. There are lots of forward thinking people out there, but we need to spread the word. And speaking about words, Stephen, you have a caller now from Ohio.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much, Steve. Hello. Who am I speaking with in Ohio?
Sherry.
Well, hello, Sherry. How may I help you this evening?
Well, I wanted to see if you see my daughter getting taken out of my house for a while.
Okay. All right, and that's what you would like to ask about?
Yes.
Okay. One second. Let's see here. What's going to be the result of this? I'm sorry that this is happening to you, first of all. Sorry to hear this. And you're going to have to batten down the hatches, I'm afraid, okay? It's going to be some difficult moments ahead, but I think you know that. The good news about all of this is that you are going to advance spiritually. I know this might not seem like much of a comfort, but you are going to receive a great deal of spiritual advancement, spiritual strength, and wisdom. But unfortunately, for the time being, and probably for the next several months, things are going to be going against you with in terms of your daughter ever coming back to the house. So it might be several months before that happens, I'm afraid. But I'm sorry that you're going through this, though, Sherry.
But to come back, you don't know how long it's going to be before they check her out of here.
Well, not sure how long it's going to be before peace is established in your home, for whatever that means. It seems like things are going to be pretty topsy-turvy in the home, at least for the next 6 months, as much as I hate to say that. And that's why I say you're going to advance in spiritual strength, but the downside to that is you might feel like pulling your hair out sometimes. So you're going to have to batten down the hatches, I'm afraid, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we wish you the best of luck on that one, Sherry.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Stephen. And now we have a call from Lana from Ohio.
Hi, Ohio. Are you there?
Yes.
Hi, what's your name, please?
Jeannie,
how can I help you today?
Well, I guess for my divorce. This coming Wednesday, I didn't see if you see it going my way or how it's going to go.
And you're talking about finances and properties and things like that when you say go your way?
Yeah, if it's just going to be an easy divorce or if he's going to leave me alone or whatever.
It does feel to me like it will be fairly easy. I think you will not get everything that you want, but it will not be a bad settlement for you at all. And I don't think it will be worth fighting about it because I don't think you'll get much more and all you'll do is prolong the drama and all of that. So I think that your ex has really moved on quite a bit, actually, and just wants everything to be done and over with. So I think you're in good shape with all of that, honestly.
Okay.
I think you're ready for the next phase of your life. So I'm
hoping
you're getting in the mood for that because it does feel to me, not during the holidays, but after the holidays, that there is a lot of fun coming your way if you are open to it, that there's friendship and companionship coming your way pretty quickly. But sometimes I would say to you, do a little bit hang on to being cranky. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? You understand?
Yeah.
It's almost like a habit with you that you've gotten cranky. And you're not really a cranky person. And you're actually very funny. And you have a great sense of humor. So I hope that you go back to that part of yourself, because a lot of nice doors are opening up for you after the holidays.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
Thank you, Nonna Marie. Well, I have a caller from Ohio as well. Who's calling?
Hello. Yes.
Hi there.
Yes,
how are you doing?
Steven?
It's Steve.
Oh, Steve, I'm sorry. I'm trying to see if you see me getting put back on my money from workers' comp.
Let's have a look. Let's see. I can see that money's being difficult. Let's have a look. I feel that you will, and I feel confident that you will, but I don't feel it's immediate. I don't feel it's imminent. My feeling is that it takes about 10 weeks. And I'd like to be able to say to you, oh, it's resolved, you know, next week or at least this month. But it does feel to me that it takes about 10 weeks to be resolved. But I do feel that it will be resolved, and I feel that you'll obviously feel a lot of relief financially, or some relief financially that will certainly help. The good news is yes, but the bad news is it's not going to happen straight away. Do you have an expectation on a timeline? Does 10 weeks feel about right to you?
No, because I've just went to court a couple of times, and my one lawyer, with my lawyer, I got a new doctor, and then that doctor ended up quitting, and now I have another doctor, and I think it's just a matter of getting the paperwork together. You know, I haven't gotten any money for them for like almost a year and a half, but they're trying to add on a condition, and just to see if they're going to allow it, and then put me back on my money.
I do feel that they will, but I feel if they hang in there a little longer, it's going to take some time to sort out. Is your attorney a male?
Yeah, he's a male, yeah.
Yeah, I do feel it's this male attorney that can sort this out for you. I've got a card here for a quite dynamic male that knows what he's doing, and I do feel that he can resolve this for you. Okay?
And can I ask you a question? Could you give me your phone number so like I could call you to get you to read me? I know you said go to the website, but I'm just getting used to the computer, and I can't never find you on there.
Oh, I honestly, off the top of my head, I don't know the telephone number to call me. But if you do go to the website, you can pick up the number from there. I will number that
Hello?
I can give you, and I'll put that in the chat room for you. Okay.
You do what?
I'll put it in the chat room for you, and I'll mention the number as well later on if I can get hold of it for you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck and take care.
Thank you, and God bless you.
My pleasure. Thank you. And we wish you all the best. Hope that works out for you. Okay, let me see. We have another caller. This call is for Stephen, and it's a call from Virginia.
Thank you very much, Steve. Oh, I believe we lost Virginia.
Yes, it looks like we lost the Virginia call. No problem. No
call
problem.
Call back, Virginia.
Call back, Virginia. Yes, we want to speak to you. Now, let's go back to our discussion about telepathy and research. I know that you do a lot of research, Stephen, and you're very interested in astrology. I want to ask Nonna Marie whether you have any particular research interests.
Oh, I have a million research interests.
I thought so.
Getting a PhD turned me into a geek, which is really horrible. And, whoops, hang on a sec.
There was somebody calling about your research.
Yes, apparently. So, my research originally was on the use of light, LED lights, to impact mood, addiction, obsessive compulsive disorder, traumatic stress. And there's only about 2 to 4 studies that have been done showing that if we use low-level laser light, shining it on either side of the forehead to affect the left and right hemisphere for approximately 4 to 8 minutes per treatment, that there are measurable results and improvements in the relief of depression, the ability to give up addiction, and many other incredible consequences simply using light on the brain. And, you know, the thing that's sad about this is you have to become a researcher to get this kind of material pursued, because most research is paid for by drug companies.
Yes.
If you are, you know, think about this. If we could treat mental illness or mental disorders or depression with light that you can buy at Walmart, that will put the psychopharmacology companies out of business. So then when we have someone like Dr. Powell, she has to spend her time doing fundraising for something like this. And it's extremely difficult to get a follow-up on this kind of research. And there is so much of it out there, everything from the paranormal type of stuff with telepathy to using laser light and LED lights for treatments. It's phenomenal. So I have a ton of interest in all of that. What I don't have is the capacity for fundraising and a research staff to carry that kind of material out. And it's very hard to get these kind of grants. The National Institute of Health, which is a government agency, federal government agency, now does have a website called Complementary and Alternative Medicine, and they are including quantum medicine research there, including Reiki, energy work. There was an experiment, for example, with cancer patients where one group was just a control group and got regular radiation treatment, and the other group was asked to have a relationship with the machines, to talk to the machines, to ask for help, to have an energy exchange with the machines. And in every case, the group that did that got significantly measurable, better results with less symptoms of side effects and lower doses of radiation. So we do find that kind of research even on the CAM website, the Complementary and Alternative Medicine, but it is, you know, it's still a kind of a minority field. But on the good news side of it is that 10 years ago, there was nothing like this being done whatsoever. So it, there is hope. You know, there is hope that there's a crack in the door and that people will be taught things like talk to your radiation machine. If you have cancer, you will actually get better because of it. And if people, the other thing I think that's amazing is that there is now research available out there for everybody. You don't have to go to a library. You don't have to be a doctor or a scientist. The search engine Google Scholar, which is scholar.google.com, you can go and find peer-reviewed articles and also layman-type articles from, for example, Science Direct, and you can research yourself what's going on out there, like
wow.
You know, light and mood, and you can read the experiment.
Tell us that again, Nona Marie. We're about to take a call, but tell us again.
It's scholar.google.com.
Excellent.
Or you can just put in Google Scholar, and it is a free research library for all of us to look at. And it is thicker reading. In other words, it's a little dense, and it goes into cohorts and sampling and all that. But if you're just looking as a layman, when you find these articles, you can read the introduction and read the discussion and leave the middle part, which is methodology and validation and all that. You don't really have to get into that unless you want to look at that part of it. But simply reading the introduction and discussion, you can see what the latest research is. And there's an advanced search option there where you can look for articles, say, from 2010 to 2014. So you limit it to the last 4 years of research. And it's just phenomenal what we can find now. And for people who are interested, or for example, when I was teaching psychology in colleges as a professor, I would have to argue with the administration about some of the things I was teaching. So I had to come in with research to staff meetings to say, this material is being researched. It's out there. What I couldn't say is, and our school is 10 years behind the times. I just had to be very positive about it and say, it's out there. And I use the same thing, by the way, when I go to doctors, because I'm into wellness as also a way to alleviate things like depression or whatever other kinds of mental illness. Very often nutrition makes us crazy. Bad nutrition can make us crazy. So I often find now material on the net, and I will bring it to a doctor and run the research by him and get a lot of my tests done through, say, health insurance, and then use the test results to do things to change the structure of my body and brain chemistry to feel better. So, I mean, there's just a whole new world out there, so that even if society hasn't caught up, mainstream society, you can always find someone, I have found, that will work with you if you go find the research and bring it in. So there's another site called alternativementalhealth.com, and there's a series of free articles there, all heavily researched. And you can look up things, for example, autism, and find out what are some of the causes that regular literature will not write about. And you can also find different ways to start handling that with everything from nutrition to energy methodologies. So there's an amazing, amazing world out there, and it's just takes a little bit of effort nowadays for people to go on Google and type in a question, or go on Google Scholar and type in a question, and there you are. So it doesn't really matter in some ways that the mainstream is still I guess promoting the party line about everything, like autism is a disorder and you can't do anything with it, as opposed to saying, no, there's a lot of gifts that go with that and maybe it's not a disorder at all. But the thing I think that is scary for me is that our educational system is not training people to ask questions. In fact, it's training that out of people. So then we become adults and most of our culture will not look into things like psychic phenomena, or Dean Radin's phenomenal talk on how our current research standards suppress psychic search.
He's great, Nonna Marie. He really is. Well, thank you for all those ideas. I'm definitely going to be looking some of those things up, Nonna Marie. We do have another caller from Virginia, and this is for Stephen.
Thank you very much, Steve. Hello, Virginia. How may I help you tonight?
Hi. I was just curious to see, I'm in a situation of going through a divorce, and I was just wondering how things may turn out for us.
Okay. So you wanted to know how things will turn out with this divorce proceedings that you're going through, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay. One second while I pick up on this for you, okay? Give me just one second.
Thank you.
Yes, okay. Ma'am. Yes, ma'am. My pleasure. Okay. Yes, I can definitely see the upcoming proceedings. And the process obviously will be unpleasant, as you know, you would expect it to be. However, I judge that the proceedings will be fortunate for you, at least for the most part. I mean, obviously, a divorce is not pleasant and it has unfortunate consequences. However, I have utmost confidence in the proceedings for you. If you have legal representation, and I think that you do, and if you don't, you'll get it, but the legal representation that you have will be more than competent. They will be quite good. And I don't see any harm in terms of finances or anything like that is concerned. I mean, the only unpleasantness that I see coming from the divorce proceedings is just the unpleasantness you would expect from a marriage dissolving, you know, under legal circumstances. Dude, but other than that, I mean, once you get beyond it, I totally expect you to emotionally rebound completely, full of extra wisdom. And it might be hard to see that now, but the future on this thing really is brighter than you might can think it is now.
Oh, thank you so much. That really
You were really worried about that, I could tell. I don't think you have to be a psychic to tell that you were worried about that.
Oh, yes. I was obviously majorly concerned with things, and, you know, I didn't know how it would, you know, turn out for me, and, yeah, you know, you worry about it, and that's kind of really helped me take a load off.
Good. You're going to be protected and have a lot of help to make it through this thing, okay?
Yes, sir.
Very good.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Come back and see us if you ever need us, and we wish you all the best, okay?
Thank you so much, and you have a very good evening.
You as well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was a great reading, Stephen. Thank you for that. You provided a lot of comfort for our caller. I wanted to ask, well, I want to ask both of you, but I'll start with you, Stephen. I always wake up in the morning, and I make my coffee and just feel so grateful that I do this work, that I spend my working time, and in fact most of my time, engaged in metaphysics and providing insight, and through astrology and psychic work, mediumship. I was interested to ask you both, and starting with Stephen, what your family and friends think about your work.
Well, I'll tell you something. In addition to doing this sort of work, Stephen, I spent a lot of time working at sea, you know, and one of the things I liked about working at sea is because the ship is a self-contained environment. You know, you can go at length for a long time in a hostile world and be very comfortable there, given the quality of your ship. So I liked having my work and my entire world all sort of contained and hermetically sealed in the same environment. You follow me so far?
Yes.
You know, metaphysics is like that. You know, even though I'm not working on a ship, even though I'm not caught in the crucible of being at sea, I'm on the land, you know, I can roam as I please. However, there's still the idea of having my work all around me all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that is just completely thrilling, above and beyond the English language's capability to describe it to other people. It's just really amazing. I feel, like you said, incredibly blessed to benefit from the age that we live in, where we have teams of very talented translators that are provisioning us with all of the texts and the the study materials and research materials we need to advance metaphysics in all levels. So, you know, in the Dark Ages, we've suffered a hiatus in the advancement of metaphysical things. And that hiatus, Steve, is over. All we have to do now is overcome the initial inertia of being immobile. You know what I'm saying? When you first start the vehicle going, it takes a little time to get it up to full speed, but we'll reach full speed pretty soon, Steve.
We will. I just wonder how far ahead we would be now if we hadn't had that hiatus. And I also wonder how many fascinating books there must be in the Vatican Library, Stephen.
Yeah, you know, I tell you what, as far as the evolution that we could have had, you know, unfortunately, when modern astrology picked up the reins back, you know, a couple hundred years ago, it sort of had to start blindly, and it couldn't take up where, you know, where its predecessors and ancestors left off. So, but my point is that not only did that hamper us a little bit, but it also introduced sort of a mutation into the evolution of metaphysics. You know what I'm saying? Because astrology was allowed to begin again, you know, totally separated almost from its origins and its roots. And you know, I would argue that that's a good thing. And it's probably similar in other disciplines of spiritualism as well. So we're fortunate to be living in this era. Can't imagine what it'll be like, you know, 5 or 6 centuries from now.
Well, maybe we'll be back here finding out.
I love your optimism, champ. count me in for that.
Maybe the spirit already have that planned. Do you believe in reincarnation, Nonna Marie?
I do. I didn't at first, but I do now.
What caused you to change your mind?
Probably that I had some waking recollections of past lives, one in particular, that I had confirmed by 4 different people without me ever saying a word to them about it. And that just completely blew me away that happened. It happened over a period of a couple of years. So I think that was a turning point for me, because I had done a regression at one point, but I didn't know, oh, maybe it's my imagination or something like that. But to have waking memories and then to have people from such different practices, a medicine woman, a Chinese Taoist who barely spoke any English, a psychic in the San Fernando Valley, and then my meditation teacher, who is a channeled entity, all spoke about this one particular life that I had a memory about. So that was amazing. And then to do some work on that really impacted my current life. And when I came to terms with that life, there was a ripple effect. And then I think after that, just reading some phenomenal books and, you know, life stories of other people. There was a woman, Joan Grant, I think in the 1920s or 40s. And she was sort of like an Edgar Cayce type person, except she had memories of past lives and she channeled books. She channeled these stories about her past lives that were unbelievable, so fascinating. It was amazing and very well written. So that those kind of books and reading that other people's very, very long ago, you know, long before past lives were in as kind of a cool subject, were writing about this and saying it existed for them, I think also added more fuel to the fire for me.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. I have memories of previous lives. Mm-hmm. I always did as a kid. I was never completely sure how accurate they were, but I certainly had memories that weren't from this lifetime. We do have another caller, actually, Nonna Marie, and this one's for you. This is a caller from California.
My home state. Hello, California. Are you there?
Hi, this is Jane.
Hi, what's your name? I'm sorry.
Hi, this is Jane. How are you?
Hi, Jean. How can I help you?
Well, I want to work from home. Will my company allow me to work from home? Now, I'm not sure if things will get better for me if I were to work from home, or is it better for me to look for a new job?
Right. I think your company would, after the holidays and into the new year, would be willing to try that with you for like one day a week to begin with, that kind of thing. But honestly, it feels to me like you would be very distracted at home, and working from home would in some ways be more stressful for you in terms of kind of shutting down any home life and isolating yourself enough in order to get your work done. So I do think that while you can ask for that in the next year, I actually believe that you will be much better off getting a new job. And it does feel like a very positive thing for you to get a new job. And I would start looking now. I think it will take a few months. It feels to me that more like the end of February, beginning of March, that there will be a job opportunity for you that you will like quite a bit better than what you have now. And I know that the working from home is a lovely concept, but I don't believe that in practice you will enjoy it that much. And it will be a little bit isolating for you. And when you like people, you like being around them. It's just when you're around people that drive you crazy that you get to be more of a lone wolf person. So I would say ask for it, but start looking for another job also. You'll be much happier with that.
To do both, like I'll ask and start looking.
Yes, in other words, do both, because in the meantime, you'll get a chance to try one day a week at home and find out for yourself, not just listening to me, but you can get some real experience for yourself about how you actually feel about working from home. It's a little bit challenging at times to do that without interruptions and neighbors driving you crazy and the postman ringing at the door, that sort of thing. So I think it would be a good experience for you to have, so you kind of get it out of your system that this isn't perhaps your favorite idea right now to work from home. That's why I'm suggesting you ask for it.
It's a long commute for me to get to work, and that's why, part of the reason why I want to work from home.
Yes, so I understand that. I understand the concept totally. It sounds good. That's why I suggest try it, to see if you really like it, because actually doing it is quite a bit different than thinking about it. And if you look for another job in the meantime also, so you keep both things going, my understanding is that you will get another position that you will like very, very much.
Okay, and is my company going to allow me to work, or just a certain number of days during the week?
I think they will do it on a trial basis and give you one day a week to see how that goes. And if that all feels comfortable to everybody, that they would be willing to expand that to perhaps 2 days a week. But I think that's all they'll be willing to give you right now.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Okay. You too.
Thank you, Nonna Marie. Great reading there. Really great. Wonderful show. And that does bring us to the end of another great show. I want to thank Stephen and Nonna Marie for being here and for us working together tonight. It was a lot of fun. I want to thank our wonderful guest, Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell, and encourage everyone to check out her website. I want to thank Doug, who works extremely hard behind the scenes for us, taking no glory, but keeping us on track as our executive producer and making sure that everything runs smoothly. Now, our show next week will be with a wonderful guest by the name of Pam Salem, and Pam will be interviewed by Stephen, and they will be talking about prime energy activation and transcendence, which is also known as PEAT, P-E-A-T, and I encourage you to listen in. It's something that I have experienced, and it really was very, very transformational. So do join us. Have a wonderful weekend, and join us again same time next week.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.
I just jumped at the chance.